There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
In the guest chair, we have Ahlan Baluki, who's the festival director, the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. If you've just tuned in, you're in time for this.
Arab World, discovering the region's best stories.
So it's so lovely to have you on Talking of Books.
Thank you. Welcome to the show. It's good to be on this side. I'm listening to it on the radio.
One thing that I wanted to talk to you about, so there was a really lovely article that was published by Arab Lit recently online about Bethena Alissa, the Kuwaiti writer.
Yes.
And she gave a commencement speech. I can't remember at which university in...
It was Kuwaiti University.
Kuwaiti University. And it just really struck me. I thought it was really interesting. So for today, on the first part of our Arab World segment, we're going to be talking about Bethena Alissa, her work as a writer, what she does. Her books are only available in Arabic at the moment, but I really want to talk about her. Hopefully her books will be available in translation in the future.
Yeah.
So could you start off telling us a little bit about Bethena for anybody who isn't familiar with her or her work?
Yes, so Bethena is such a powerful voice amongst the Arab youth. She's only in her 30s, but she's had 10 published novels so far. She's published 2 children's books, and she's all about pushing the boundaries, and, you know, she has such a powerful voice. She has won multiple awards for her works. Her latest book, which was, I wish all of her works were available in English, because it's such a shame, and I've actually told her that she's been approached by multiple translators for her books, but she's just waiting to select the right one, because she's got such an important message. She is actually not a lit major or anything, and it took her a very long time. And as she says in her article, she says, you know, over here, like, or maybe in the education system in general, you know, the education system in a lot of places around the world hasn't changed in the last 100 years very much. So if you're an excellent student and you have top grades, then you are kind of in the science and maths box. But, you know, if you're anyone else, then you're kind of in the humanities and arts section, if you want to put in less effort, if you like. And that was, so Bethena had super high grades, excellent student at school, and, you know, she loved to read, she was a bookworm. But, you know, so everybody around her expected her to go to med school, to go study science, and she thought, you know, who am I to challenge the system, right? So if I'm excellent, I'm getting the grades, so that's what I got to do. She goes to med school, and you know, it's easier for her to memorize. She's getting high grades. She's reading about knuckles and bone structures and things like that. And she's just thinking to herself, well, when am I going to read the things that I actually love? And you know, it was tough for her. It was a challenge. She was challenging the system the whole time. She was kind of rebelling out of class and things like that. You know, and everyone would kind of tell her, look, you're not a quitter. That's just not who you are. And there's so many voices around her, whether it's the community or it's the families or the school. But then she says, you know, one day I come out of class, and she goes into a morgue to try to find the voice that's going to tell her, you need to save humanity against disease, and, you know, to find the motivation to go on in med school. And she goes into the morgue, and she's looking at a body, and, you know, she's just looking around it and things like that. And she has all these voices in her head. She's waiting for that voice to tell her to go on. And then one of, you know, the person in charge of the morgue comes in and says, are you in the next class? And she says, no. And he tells her, well, get out.
And so that's the voice
that
she needed.
That's the voice that she got. She's like, I got out of the morgue, I got out of med school, and I just got out of, you know, the major that I was studying in. And that's the speech she was making to the students of Kuwait University. And, you know, and then she still didn't dare to go into literature and study literature. So she took a safer option, which was business administration, because she thought it was something that... you know, for her, at least a little bit more enjoyable than the medicine content. But at the same time, she got a lot of time to be reading novels at the back of the class.
I read that. I thought it was so funny.
Yeah. While still acing her grades, yeah. She was saying. So she does that. And then she goes on and works in a government job. And then she does an MBA. all while in the back, you know, secretly reading. It's crazy when you think about that. That she had to hide her passion for reading. She says it took me 16 years to be able to do what I love and pursue what I love, and not be afraid of judgment or the voices all around me. And she ended this speech with something, a quote by Mahmoud Darwish, who said, I've lived a life of trials, a series of struggles between right and wrong, until I was able to find that voice I haven't lost since that day. It gets clearer every day. It's a voice I don't want to lose because it's the only compass I have. It tells me constantly who I am and what I'm supposed to be.
That's beautiful.
Mm.
It's incredible. And
it took her 16 years to get to that point.
Yeah.
So it's interesting when I was reading her speech, because I think it's really a universal issue that we have with, you know, people tell you you're good at something at school or at university and you feel this pressure to have to do whatever you're told is good or whatever you think you're good at. You might be good at accounting or math or something. Think I might as well do this because society or the way the system is set up, it is encouraging of that, and that's how I'm going to make a living. But even if your passion is literature or the arts or painting, there isn't sort of a space there for you to make a living off it, it's difficult to really follow that passion. So it's I mean, 16 years is a long time for some people, but I think probably for her it was just the right time.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, now these days you see young people going after all sorts of things and making a career out of it.
Mm.
But the university system or the school systems, there are some experimental systems around the world that are trying to figure out, you know, how to give all students the right environment to succeed. But it's still not by any means the mainstream.
No.
It's not. The education system just doesn't allow you to be whoever you are. Because, we tell people at the LitFest, we tell people there's a book for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that book converts you. So we're not divided into readers and non-readers, mm-hmm. right? There's a book for everyone because there's something that you will be interested in and there'll be books on that subject. So make up your own mind on that subject. Don't let someone else study it for you and then tell you their perspective, right? Find out your own perspective. And it's the same with education, because you are unique in a certain way. But when you think about school, when you look back at school, there was the clever kids and not so smart kids, and the kids that sit in the back and the kids that rebel and the kids that talk in class. And, you know, there's all these like classifications of who you are, where kids should know that they are all, you know, unique in their own way, and they can each succeed if they find that voice, you know. So her advice at the end of her speeches, so, you know, Darwish talks about that. So find your voice, whatever it is, and don't worry, don't fear, because you can't make change, you can't make the world a better place unless you find that voice.
Mm-hmm. And I think a part of also finding that voice is also not have is a part of you sort of maybe not caring what other people think. I think that's really important. I know for me, I think it's not only an education or university thing. I think it's as well, it's like a what people will say thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, I went to art school straight out of high school, and a lot of my parents were fine with it. My parents were great, but a lot of my parents or friends were like, really? Art school?
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to get into like engineering, or what about architecture? Like, that's kind of in the middle of arts and also engineering. It's like a safer path.
That's true.
So that's kind of, you know, those little comments kind of can sort of get to you. So I think as well as finding your voice is being able to be like, I'm sure of this, this is what I want to do, and pursuing that, which is quite difficult.
Yeah, that's true. My brother was in the same boat as you, actually. He was pushed into architecture because he could draw and he was into the arts. So he ended up, you know, changing majors and then doing a second bachelor's degree in art. So it was so much time wasted if he had gone from the start.
Yeah.
Speaking of Bethana and 16 years for her to get to this point where she's giving this inspiring speech and making us all feel rather uplifted on the show today, I have to say. She's also the founder of Taqueen.
Yes.
Which is kind of amazing. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that? Because we have a couple more minutes left.
Yes. I went to Kuwait for work, actually, late last year. And I met Bethana and she told me, come to Taqueen. Let's meet there. And you just fall in love with this bookstore that she has, because it feels like her personal bookstore. You know, it's small. You know, I mean, I say relatively small when compared to, you know, Kinokuniya and things like that we have over here. But it's like, it just feels like a boutique bookstore. And, you know, she walked me through it with so much love, because all of the books that are there, either she's read or someone in her team has read, and she'll be like, she can tell you, you know, the right things about them, and she talks about them with such passion. It's amazing. You know, it's all dark wood shelves. She has the leather couch. She has, you know, it's just the whole feel of the place is really magical. And the top floor is adult. The bottom floor is the children's floor. It's all Arabic, which is unique. You know, I haven't seen any all Arabic bookstores here, for example. And you know that everything is quality, you know, what you're going to get, because she's read it and she can recommend it. If she doesn't think it's good, it's not going to be in Tequeen.
And she published, it's a publishing house as well?
It's a bookstore, it's a creative writing workshop place. And it's something that she does is really unique. You can register and it's like a membership, and you pay a certain amount for 6 months. And every month you'll receive books based on your interest category. And you need to trust someone before you can take their recommendation on books. And I absolutely love everything that Tequeen sends me every
And it's all in Arabic.
All in Arabic.
Amazing.
Yeah.
One thing that that strikes me from that is bookshops where the staff or the people who work there, they know what they're talking about in terms of recommendations. I mean, that's not something that you always get with bookshops. And it's just so lovely when you do actually find that, when you walk in and it feels less like a bookshop and more like somebody's home that they're welcoming you to, and you tell them what you like and they say, well, have you tried this? I mean, that's something that I haven't had in a while.
That's true.
A good book doctor.
Yes.
And they have a real advantage to the bigger, you know, you go in there. Yes, everything is there, but you know, it's different when you go somewhere small and then they're actually recommending exactly what you should read.
Yeah.
You know, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Arab World, discovering the region's best stories.
We've moved on subject-wise to audiobooks. Now, I'm going to introduce Tariq to you. So he was selected this year by the UAE Prime Minister's Office as an Arab Youth Pioneer. He's an entrepreneur who has turned his passion for the written and spoken word into Booklava, a platform that seeks to provide top quality and best-selling audio content in Arabic. Welcome to the show, Tariq.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So just to get started and introduce you to the listeners, is there anybody that you'd like to give a shout out to?
To my wife, who's about to deliver any moment now.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
I'll be number two, our baby daughter. So we're looking forward to
that. Thank you
for
coming on the show.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank her for letting you come on the show.
I will. Thank you, Zena. Love you.
So Booklava, I very briefly mentioned it just there. First of all, why the name Booklava? It's intriguing. And what is it? What does it do?
What do you think it comes from?
I think I already know. I think it comes from a food.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, it goes in two ways. One is food baklava, the baklava, and Booklava. So it works both ways. We have English and Arabic content, so a lot of our Arabic users or listeners immediately connected to baklava, and English or Western listeners think it's Booklava. So it works both ways. But initially, I mean, it's essentially baklava, and it's because the baklava is al-baklawa in Arabic is kind of addictive. And although it's kind of fattening, but you feel it's very light, and that's what we think content should be like, you know, and that's what audio listening, like podcasts, audiobooks, etc., is like. It's addictive.
So has it launched now? Is content available to download?
Yeah, we launched in January. Before that, we were in beta testing because we've built everything from scratch. It's a new industry, so we even had to engage publishers and authors and educate them about the platform or about the format, the audio form. So now, yeah, we have, we're live, and we're bringing more content on board, and we're excited to work with partners in this space.
How many users are using it now?
Close to 10,000.
Wow.
And growing.
Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually growing much faster than we expected. And that kind of proves that, there's a big demand for Arabic audiobooks.
I'm responsible for one of those.
Ahlam is one of our users. Thanks a lot, Ahlam, for downloading and
it's
trying.
It's great because you've got the important stuff. You've got Khalil Gibran.
Exactly.
And you've got Jalaluddin al-Rumi. So,
exactly.
You know, you've got the basics.
The good guys.
Yeah, and those are recorded with some of the best voices in the Arab world, like Jihad al-Atrash, iconic
really
voices. So for us, having also very professional voice actors who are celebrities also narrate these books is very important in getting this kind of format up and going in the Arab world.
Do you was that difficult? Because I know maybe for some Arabs they prefer to maybe read books, and maybe audio is something that's new in the reading world and technology world. I think even in the West some people are still a bit iffy about listening to an audiobook because they don't consider it reading. So what's the resistance, or what are the obstacles that you face with people who are who heard about Booklava?
You know, I mean, as Arabs, so I'm an Arab, I'm Lebanese, but I'm also Canadian, but I mean I'm an Arab 100%, and for us Arabic language is a very oral language. It's very deep in that kind of oral culture that we have, so it's pretty natural. And I always say that I think this industry should have started from the Arab world, not in the US first, where today audiobooks is the fastest growing sector in publishing in the world.
Yeah,
it's blowing up. Almost 1 in 4 and a bit more of Americans listen to an audiobook every month, and so it's just huge. I mean, it's also transformative. We didn't get as much. I mean, there is definitely resistance. People are like, you know, is it reading? Are we cheating? You know, they feel like, is it cheating? You know, but no. I mean, today we are at a time where we are trying to always be productive, where we're looking for life hacks. And the end of the day, it's about the content that's in your head. It's not about how you consume it. You know, so it's just like how movies went into TV shows and series, and you can watch a movie off your phone now. So that's kind of also cheating if you think about it. You know, you should be in a movie theater. So that's kind of changing.
And we're being more creative with the way we tell those stories, even on audiobooks now. So especially in the UK, and some of the ones that I've downloaded via Audible or whatever in English, it seems like they're taking more risks and putting more into the production value of it as well. Having, for example, Lincoln in the Bardo, which won the Man Booker Prize last year, that broke a record for the number of voices that were used in an audiobook. So it definitely is making leaps and bounds. But I think it's interesting you said that you would have expected it to have started here.
Yeah, yes. I mean, you know, I mean, there are many reasons. One of the reasons, and as you were saying, that's correct. I mean, if you look at today, the Hollywood actors are jumping on the platform.
Yeah.
Some of them even recording their own memoirs with their own voice. Why I think it should have started here is because the publishing industry has had challenges. And one of those main challenges is distribution. Although we are a big region, but we are also very spread out, and we have a lot of borders, which means distribution of content, just getting a book across from one country to another country is difficult. We also have 50 million Arabs around the world that are in all different pockets of the diaspora. And you know, these are first and second generation Arabs, even third, who can understand Arabic, but they cannot read Arabic anymore because they're not in a place where they can have access to learning Arabic, or their parents can't teach them Arabic at all. So it's a pretty, you know, and that's why I say it, audiobooks should have taken off a long time ago, because it's just natural to make Arabic culture and literature more accessible to that diaspora, and also Arabs in the region as well who cannot have access, because we don't have a lot of libraries, unfortunately. There are other reasons why content cannot be available in different countries and stuff like that.
In terms of the content that is already available now, you mentioned Rumi, Khalil Gibran. Yeah. So what kind of range are we looking at on Booklava at the moment?
I mean, for us, it's pretty, you know, diverse. So we have a lot of books for kids, Arabic audiobooks for kids, and that's great for kids because a kid can actually listen to two levels above his age level. So that gives them access to richer content than what he can do if he has had to read. Mm. We have adult fiction. We have some nonfiction. We're bringing on some audio magazines soon, like the Harvard Business Review in Arabic, the Popular Science in Arabic, MIT Tech Review in Arabic. So we want to also bring some self-help in business.
Yeah.
We're also going to be introducing meditational content as well. So you name it. I mean, drama, poetry, romance. We have an amazing, actually some of the best productions on the platform is something, you know, is a Diwan al-Mutanabbi. And these kind of Dawaween shot, or these are beautiful because they're done dramatized as well.
This is all really exciting. So very quickly, Fahad has just texted in. Thank you for your text message. He says, great show. Booklava is a great idea. How did you fund it?
I don't know if it's fortunate or unfortunate, but we had to fund it ourselves, me and my co-founder. And we had an angel that believed in us in the beginning. So we put our own money. That's money I saved, everything. I came here, you know, in the Arab, you know, as a Lebanese, you're always told that you need to save and buy a home. I did that, but I did not buy a home. I put it into this, and hopefully we're hoping that it works. And we're sure that it will. And now we're fundraising because it's a very expensive endeavor. You're producing content. We're also going to be introducing something very interesting soon. That's in the space of audio drama. So it's obviously a big endeavor, and that's why we are fundraising, as you know, as we're talking right now.
Sorry, man, you were about to ask a question.
I was going to ask you how you came up with, because the idea has so much potential. Just as you're talking, I'm thinking of all these amazing ways that people can utilize this platform. But I'm wondering how the idea first got to you, how you first got the idea.
I used to be an expat with a multinational corporation based out of their headquarters in Switzerland. And, you know, we were traveling 50 times a year, covering the world. And the problem that I love reading. My father has embedded reading into all of us at home from a very young age. And also at school, it was very important. Reading was very important. But with all that traveling, I was not able to keep up anymore. And at the time, a friend introduced me to Audible. Mm. It was English audiobooks, but I wanted to, you know, I wanted to have, you know, for me, I prefer listening to Arabic myself over reading it, because I did not learn it from a young age. Because I was up till the age of 10, I was raised in Canada, before moving back to Lebanon after our civil war. So it was kind of a personal need. And we're like, when we're looking at this, I mean, when I was exploring it, me and my co-founder were like, wow, I mean, why didn't this happen yet in this region? It's a great opportunity. Apart from our personal use of it, but also from a commercial standpoint, and also for the literary and the cultural, you know, part of the Arab world, it needs this. Mm-hmm. You know, we should, you know, a book, and that's something we always talk about with publishers and authors and so on, that they should not look at their book as a print version. They should look at their book as several formats. It can be a movie. It can be
a story.
It's a story. Yeah, exactly. It can be in so many different ways. Some of the best movies in history were adapted from books, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, might go to like The Godfather, yeah. for example. These are all, they start off from being a book into other formats.
You know, they say for a writer to write a good book is to write the book that he wants to read. But what you've done is you've built the library that you want to go into, which mm-hmm. I think is so great.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's a big endeavor, but I mean, hopefully with the support of the ecosystem. I mean, I want to actually do a shout out, if I may, to
Absolutely.
The Emirates Litfest. I mean, they've, you know, from day one,
thank you.
From day one, I remember I emailed Isabel Abulhol like almost a year and a half ago, and I didn't expect her to reply, giving her seniority in this, and she was like quick to reply and very, you know, very supportive and trying to, you know, and so also I mean, shout out to the book fairs here, like the Abu Dhabi Book Fair and the Sharjah Book Fair, who've been also supportive of trying to get culture around the world.
That's pretty. Right. I think it's going to be a real game changer also in terms of preserving the language, which is a concern that we have, you know. Even if you pick up a book and you're reading a book, listening to it, you're hearing the right grammatical pronunciations and, the, you know, there's a lot of music in the Arabic language as well. And I think it's an easy way to make you fall in love with the language, because if you're listening to, like, if you're going to introduce podcasts soon and, you know, there's poetry and this and that, there's not a lot of platforms where you can listen to that right now.
And for anyone who's listening, who's learning Arabic, I think this is a really great way as well to learn quicker.
That's why I'm excited right now.
You cannot imagine the amount of requests we're getting from Arabs around the world, yeah. From Africa, from North America, from Latin America, for Arab learning, to, you know, Arab as a, you know, to learn Arabic, and that's something we're going to be introducing soon. And as you were saying, Ahlam, that's very true. The beauty of Arabic is more in listening to it than reading it, honestly. I mean, that's in my point of view. And there's a lot of art in it. So it's a really transformative experience.
We're in the middle of a great chat about this. And one thing that I wondered about production, now you said that you've got some great readers coming into this. I didn't realize that you actually handled the production of all this as well. I thought it was literally just a platform that you had built, but you manage everything.
Yeah, because we have to. I mean, we'd love to be a platform where we can focus on just aggregating audio and then focusing on marketing and all that. But, you know, the reality is there isn't audio content out there apart from music to really aggregate. So we are now producing. We're more involved in the entire kind of value chain of audiobooks. But we are also trying to help others, to like other publishers and authors, to even connect them to our talents and our studios so that they can have their content and audio. They pay for it, they own their IP, and we actually recommend that. I think that, you know, it's not just about us producing and owning and all that. It's more about having the content of even on other platforms, for example, and everywhere. So that's why, I mean, eventually we'd like to, I think the industry will mature into where we are more like platforms and aggregating and maybe producing our own original content. Mm. And then, you know, authors and publishers taking ownership of having, you know, investing themselves into the audio and all that.
A great point that you made earlier was the fact that it's surprising that this didn't exist already here as opposed to in other countries, especially with Arabic, and also the musicality of the language as well. And one thing that came up out of the Abu Dhabi Book Fair, because we had a couple of Flora and Rania from the Emirates Literature Foundation came on, and they were saying that apparently a lot of areas relating to Arabic publishing were being addressed at Abu Dhabi Book Fair, things like piracy protection, editing, things that are still being worked on. Is the lack of audiobooks before you came along in Arabic, was that related to these other areas of publishing that were still, is it the publishing industry as a whole that is still being formed, or is it a separate discussion that we're having?
No, it's totally related. Today, the publishing industry is going through challenges. A majority of the industry is archaic, is still, is not progressing as fast as it should. I don't know if I can be very open and direct. I mean, I think that's one of the issues why we have not seen a proliferation of other formats of literature and culture. It's because it's being held back mm-hmm. by these kind of older or these institutions that don't want to progress. But then again, you have other publishing houses that do want to kind of evolve and are at the forefront, and they're trying to, they're trying to push with a lot of support from the leadership and institutions and stuff like that. So, yeah, the challenges are, we all know, the big one is, there's piracy when it comes to ebooks, for example. Distribution, which I mentioned earlier, is a major issue. I also think that there's, we need quality content in Arabic, which is lacking. As much as we like to say we have a lot of Arabic, but we don't. That's why a lot of people try to opt into the reading in English. And then if they read the translation of that, it's not the same quality. So also translation quality needs to improve. There's also obviously censorship. The difficulty being an author in the Arab world is that once your book is printed, you have to think of having it approved in all the other, 25 or 20 plus different countries, regulatory bodies, which is not very efficient. So by the time you're done, it's like it takes ages. So that's one of the reasons why I think, that's why audiobooks. Yeah, I mean, audiobooks is stuck into that. I mean, maybe that's why it didn't take off as earlier. Obviously, there needs to be also investment. There needs to be private and government investment into this space, which is lacking significantly.
But I think with platforms like yours, or even, for example, we have the IPAP, where we see massive successes like Frankenstein in Baghdad, that's doing amazing. It's on the International Man Booker Prize shortlist. When we're seeing these kind of successes happening, it won. What?
It won. Yeah, it's a Booker.
What?
Yeah,
I missed that.
Keep up, man.
I think 2014, 15, something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
No, the IPAP. I'm not talking about the International Man Booker. It won. I thought, was that already announced? Won the IPAF a couple of years ago.
Oh, I thought it won. Never mind.
No.
Carry on.
Okay, maybe it did. Okay.
Let me look that up.
We need to Google that.
Carry on.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that I think these small successes, when we hear that you have 10,000 users on a platform that you started in January, I think that is so positive and encouraging for people out there to want to actually create more of these books, invest in these sort of platforms. So I think it's a slow but steady walk that we're trying to walk to raise the bar for our publishing.
100%. It's a long-term game. I mean, it's going to take time. That's why it requires patience. It requires, an environment that's conducive for it, an ecosystem that's supportive. So it's going to, I fully agree, yeah.
And plus you're thinking about it being sustainable as well. You're not thinking about something that's going to last for the next like 1 year or 2 years. And that's why creating your own content as well, and maybe creating, you were saying, educational content as well is important.
I mean, we've been running for almost 2 years now with no revenue.
Wow.
No income. I mean, no in, it's all out. Mm-hmm. And it's a big number, but because we strongly believe in the importance of this. This is a purpose or a mission I've taken on myself by, I quit corporate and I went into this because I really believe in the important. I even moved back to the Arab world because mm-hmm. I want to do something that's really impactful. And I believe one of the main issues we have is knowledge. I mean, there's a gap of knowledge and accessibility for it.
Three things. One, I was wrong, and I do apologize. But we do find out who wins from the shortlist on the 22nd of May. So okay. not long at all. Two, what genre from your platform? I don't know if you have this information. What genre of audiobooks in Arabic are most popular?
Today, by the way, I think Frankenstein, but I think it won the earlier versions.
The one that I passed in 2014, yeah, exactly. I think. But the Man Booker International, it's been awarded this year because it's been translated. Yeah.
And it's a great. These are the kind of, you know, and I think I would love to see more of these authors. Yeah. Okay. Teaching in universities, teaching creative writing, being more involved in also, you know, bringing on the new generation of writers.
Well, the festival was great. They brought Ahmed Saddawi for this year's festival, and he had some really great sessions as well. Yeah. So, your question, you were asking about what genres really
Just really
people's
interest. We're running out of time.
Yeah,
it's
mainly novels,
fiction.
So fiction, but also business and nonfiction. There's a lot of requests for that. A lot of people are interested in self-help, self-development. That's a big thing happening. We see a lot of that being requested also in Saudi Arabia, for example. There's kind of a boom in that space now.
Well, yeah. We could talk to you all day, Tariq, but unfortunately we don't have the time. But thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a great opportunity to be here, meeting, you know, you and Man. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. And all our best to your wife as well, who I think you should probably leave now.
No, she's fine. I mean, we have some time.
Okay, all right.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.